The Effin' Rad Snowboard Podcast is presented by Vans. Season 6 of Effin' Rad is sponsored by Wired Snowboards, The Boardroom Snowboard Shop, Anon Optics, Finest Quality Crow's Nest Barbershops, Tribute Board Shop in Nelson, BC, and Stance Socks. I've been riding Wired Snowboards for 3 seasons now, and I'm proud to be supported by a snowboard company that can create a custom board right here in Vancouver, BC. The Wired shapes offer something for everyone and ride amazingly. I'm working on a custom Wired board this season with wood harvested from Mount Seymour. My buddy Clarence helped select a yellow cedar that he estimates was 300 years old when it fell over 100 years ago. Clarence is a famous totem pole carver from Haida Gwaii, and we had a lot of fun working on this project together so far. Now Rob's going to glue the core together and make a Wired board from wood from Mount Seymour for me to ride on Mount Seymour. You can buy a Wired board at boardroomshop.com or check out wiredsnowboards.com and design your own high-quality custom snowboard for around the price of most companies' production boards. Support also comes from Grouse Mountain and Mount Seymour. Thanks, you guys. Both mountains have great parks this week. It's sunny and cold. Get up there. Congratulations, Cameron McCallum, who won this week's Effin' Rad Foundation Raffle. We raised $105 on our first week, and it warms my heart to have the foundation off and running. Russell Winfield, John Roth, and Rob Dow have joined the board of directors, so I'm super stoked. This week's guest, Ross Rebliati, has agreed to mail out a Ross Gold prize pack. That's his weed company, so if the winner's outside of Canada, it's going to have to be stickers and a t-shirt. Or actually, I think Ross might even be up for doing a pencil rubbing of his Olympic gold medal, signing it and sending it out to the lucky winner. So send a donation to effinradfoundation@hotmail.com, either PayPal or e-transfer, and I'll put your name in a draw for that. Ross was the very first snowboarder to win an Olympic gold medal, but before that, he was a really good pro snowboarder with some amazing stories. Here we go, this week's guest, Ross Rebliati.
My first board was a board that I made in woodwork.
Unbelievable.
And that would have been in 86 or 7. I think 87 probably.
Did you trace something?
No. What we saw snowboarding in some European, where they were snowboarding in Europe or something like that.
Sure.
Like an actual brochure, right? Like paper.
Red.
And yeah. And so we just like made these snowboards and we made our own shapes, and our woodwork teacher, like, we laminated the plywood into a mold.
Cool.
So it had a tip like that went up, and we had a tail on it and everything. And then we cut the ends, the toes off of ski boots, and then strapped inner tube, you know, to the two sides that you could put your foot in the toe, right? And then put the inner tube thing behind your boot.
So cool.
And so that was the first one. The first production board I ever had, I got from this shop near Stanley Park at the time. Only store in Vancouver that sold snowboards. Denman Cycles.
So cool. Yeah.
And I can't remember the guy's name, but he started the Canadian Snowboard Association or something like
that. Oh, wow.
I think his name was, anyway, I can't remember. And it was a Burton Elite 155 with the swallowtail and the Fastex seatbelt bindings with 3 fins on the bottom of it.
Unbelievable.
And
where could you ride that at that time?
Well, it only worked good in fresh snow.
Right.
The way it was set up. And we were, I guess, Cypress Bowl and then Blackcomb allowed snowboarding that year. That was near me.
Yeah.
And so we hightailed it up to Blackcomb, and we were first in line on the first day of the mountain, on the first year snowboarding.
Wow.
That was allowed, and took the board up. Pretty much went all the way to the top of Seventh Heaven. And in those days, I think it was a T-bar too that you had to take to get up there. I can't remember if their chairlift was there yet, but took me pretty much the whole day to get back to the village. So this was kind of learning on the go with that board. I took the fins off, and by the next day it was, the board worked a little bit better, but yeah, it was, I kept drifting off the side of the road. I could not stay on the road. Like the road just goes for 100 miles from the top of seventh heaven.
Yeah, totally.
Right?
Longest run in Canada, for
probably,
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you could just switch back and forth, just follow the road all the way down. It's 10 kilometers long.
Yeah, by the time it was a toe-side turn all the way to the rendezvous. Anyway, yeah. It's classic.
That's fun. So were you hooked instantly? Was that?
Yeah. I was hooked before I even tried it. Like, because I bought the board in, well, first of all, the homemade boards that we made were just for fun and never really grabbed our attention. You know, no ski resorts allowed it. I was a ski racer. My parents were spending big bucks on the ski race.
The Nancy Green thing, is that what it was?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. The Nancy Green for the Grouse Mountain.
Right.
Thai Ski Club. And
they have good fall line there. People don't know that.
Oh, yeah.
That fall line's super sick for racing.
It is.
They still do it now. It's great. It's good on a POW day. I love Grouse. It's
awesome. And I'm riding Apex these days.
Oh, fall line.
They have a great race program. And I'm back on racing skis. I kind of drifted back and forth from, after I retired, back and forth from snowboarding and new shapes of skis, like powder skis. Unreal compared to the last skis I had when I stopped ski racing was 87. They're probably about 4 centimeters wide.
Yeah.
Right? Anyway.
Yeah. I saw your board, I think the one you won the Olympics on display on West 4th, maybe at Pacific Border.
Or probably not.
Or a signed version of something.
Something,
like that.
One of my race boards.
Yeah.
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 The one that's
shit.
From the Olympics
is
at the Olympic Museum.
Oh, wow.
At the Richmond Oval.
Come on.
Yeah. So if,
so sick.
You can check that. There's,
I'm going there.
There's a Ross section.
Come on.
Yeah, I'm smoking a big fatty.
Love it, dude. That's incredible. Yeah, but I was going to say that even that board, like I wouldn't ride it in powder.
Tell me about that one that you saw at the store.
It was all white.
Okay, yeah.
It had an all white top
sheet. That's what I thought.
And it was very, very thick through the middle.
Like, yeah, they're stiff.
You could not bend the thing to save your life.
Yeah, I have a couple more of those actually right in that room.
Yeah, and I was like looking at it, that thing would suck in powder. It would rip corduroy like crazy or icy shit, but it's a very specific tool. And it was super big. It's like,
yeah, it was. I mean, I'm not sure which one you saw, but some of those ones were upwards of 200 centimeters.
Yeah. It was just like as someone who snowboarded since I think 88, and I've had every kind of board you can imagine, but not a, like my race board would have been like a Kemper Aggressor, which wasn't even, it was so wide.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was just like a big square.
Awesome
tail.
In powder.
Yeah. Yeah.
All
exactly.
The old race boards were still good in powder.
Totally.
Like the M8.
Totally. Yeah.
And all those, like the Sim 1710.
Totally.
All that shit.
Yeah. The 1710 was just a big.
I loved that board, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I had that board.
You had that board. So you went from a Burton to a Sims, probably?
No, I had the. Let's see. I think I went from the Burton Elite, and then I got the 165 because I was on the 155. So I got the same board, but the longer one.
Yeah.
And then from there, got me into that Craig Kelly, the first Kelly summer camp.
Oh, sick.
And then they were looking for people to sponsor at the time. This was the summer of 87.
Unbelievable.
Or summer of 88. I think it was summer of 87.
I love that you went to that camp because when I interviewed Tim Wendell, he said his first year of camp, they had just come back from the glacier in Austria, I think, or somewhere in Europe. And Craig and he partnered up and did a camp together. And that was at Blackcomb.
Mm-hmm.
And you went to that year.
I was a camper.
Oh, man.
And they were still building the other T-bar.
Unreal.
And so we had just had the one T-bar and we, there was a pipe.
It was
a long time ago, man. I was like 15 or 16, probably 15, 1987. I was probably 15.
Unfriggin' believable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wendell said that because they did that camp and they kept the summer going, they had a leg up at competition the next year, right? And you think of Craig in that TDK, he was ahead of everybody.
Yeah.
Because he was training all summer and he was dissecting snowboarding to try and figure out how to teach it.
Yes.
And so because he was looking at it from his engineering mind kind of thing, he was able
his rocket science mind.
Yeah, exactly. He was able. So what was it like to be a camper at that camp? Would you stay in the village and then go up in the morning on the school bus thing?
Yeah. That's, I, my dad had a place that we had a place there in Whistler.
Wow.
You know, growing up. And so, yeah, we, I stayed there, but we, I hung out with Craig. Like, I was already like, Craig was already my idol at the time. Like,
right.
Already, like, I only had been into snowboarding for 1 year, and we'd go to the skateboard shop, West Coast Skateboards, and we'd like beg them to like, when are you getting Transworld, you know? And we'd
Rad.
Look at Transworld like 100,000 times a day until the next one came out.
Yeah.
Right? And stare at the pictures and like practice the tricks on the floor and everything.
Totally.
And so I already knew who Craig was. I couldn't even believe, right? So, yeah, it was up and coming. Never, it was my first year. And by the end of that camp, like Tim Wendell had me like sending a, you know, getting a proposal from Sims, and Kerry Hannon had some boards coming to me from K2.
Wow.
And there was, you know, Craig was there and said, you know, if I was interested, he could hook me up with Burton.
So he had just made the jump to Burton at that point, right?
He was on, I think he was on the Mystery Air.
Yeah. Like the mystery, Mystery Air, yeah, like the blank one.
No graphics.
Oh, that's so dope.
Yeah. And it was all black, and
yep.
We were all like, whoa, you know, that's like more than a prototype. Like, he's supposed to be on Sims right now.
And yeah.
There's
yeah.
this whole thing. And then Burton did this really cool Mystery Air promotion. And then, of course, that was my first season riding for Burton. So I got the Mystery Air when it came out. It had like the three circles on the
yeah.
tail. And
yeah.
all the cool Burton apparel. I mean, there was nothing cooler in my mind. I had the Oakley razor blades. Like, it came nice. With the Oakley sponsorship, right?
Come on.
And, you know, I often went down to Mount Vernon to Craig's house to pick up like Thule boxes and packs of snowboards from Burton.
Wow.
I remember one particular time when I got my box, I also got like, because Burton wouldn't pay me in money, or because I was amateur, I wouldn't get paid in money. So they sent me like 20 boards.
Oh my God.
Of these Craig Kelly, like the red and black one.
Yep. The ketchup and mustard.
Yeah. And so I had my Thule box that I was picking up there, my rack, and all those boards in the Thule box and all the bindings, all the bags of bindings, all in my, had this VW van. And the whole nice. Thing was jammed full of snowboard gear. And I'm coming through Washington back to BC, like, nothing, everything's good. They're like, okay, right? Meanwhile, I got like all this gear, and I'm just a teenager, right? Just breaking yeah. all the rules.
Yeah, that's like $10,000 no worth of gear.
No clue how much
more,
trouble
more
I would have gotten
yeah.
into, right?
And then, right.
So, anyway.
Oh, that's amazing. So you get those boards across, and was that kind of a contract, like, okay, you can sell a board a month kind of thing to
It was basically to fund my season.
Yeah, to fund your season.
And so that I could get to the races.
Yeah.
And it was tricky, I guess, in those days to like move money around, and you could get a check in the mail type of thing, but it would take, you know, whatever. Who knows what? I can't even remember. I remember Paul Alden was the team manager.
Yeah.
And Craig gave me the nod to Burton.
Oh, that's so sick.
I was riding for Burton.
What was the gear that you had? Was it yellow pants yet, or was it?
No, Craig was still wearing them. the Burton gear.
Yeah.
You know, we had those cool green and black pants that,
yep.
with the cool knee pad.
The pads, yeah, freestyle pants.
On them,
yep.
right? And then the long elbow length race gloves.
Oh yeah.
With the purple pads on them, the leather.
Yeah, man.
Like super killer gloves.
Yeah.
Back in those days, you could still cross like the cool ski stuff, you know, that was, there's a couple of things in skiing that was cool.
Yeah. I remember Rakely gloves or
right.
Yeah. Yeah.
All that technical gear that you know, anyways.
North Face stuff. Yeah, man. You totally.
So there's guys rocking Fisher toques and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, totally.
But, yeah, yeah.
Is that when you shoot the photo for the cover of Transworld Snow around that time?
That would have been a couple of years after that.
Oh, yeah, because by that point you're on West Beach. I remember the West Beach headband.
Yeah.
We bought that headband My friend Chris Lyons and I both wanted that headband so bad because you were on the cover. He had the cover on his wall, and we're like, what's West Beach? And that was probably our first introduction to West Beach.
So the West Beach story is the way it started was they were three surfers. That was their logo.
Yeah.
And there were a little pink store across the street from their main store that everyone knows called California BC.
Right.
And I used to go in there all the time, and Chip worked there.
Yeah.
And everyone knows Chip went on to start Lululemon.
Yeah.
And so eventually I was like, you know, I'm doing these contests. Why don't, you know, I wear your sweatshirts in the contest and give me free shit. And so that's how the West Beach team started. And they changed their logo after that season to the three snowboarders.
And that's incredible.
And then...
Yeah, because it was volleyball stuff or like these shorts. It was like West Beach.
Yeah, it was like surf. Like,
yeah, yeah, surf shorts.
Surf, volleyball.
He was cutting and sewing those.
You know?
He was cutting and sewing those in Calgary, and he moved out to that little... It was a really eclectic house on 4th Avenue between the two boardrooms eventually. And in fact, Murray rented out that house and used it as an office until they tore it down.
It had a,
Yeah.
It was a cool place.
Yeah, it was just neat.
It was a cool store.
Yeah.
You know, and the guys were cool, and they had like all the cool like TNC and stuff.
That's
like,
right.
Like back, t-shirts were a way different deal in those days than
totally.
Today.
Yeah, like No Fear stuff. Like it was, you could have a whole company that was just selling t-shirts with like dogs growling on them or whatever you want, you know, like neon.
Right.
And make money hand over fist.
Yeah, they're printing money.
It was crazy. Yeah, so you're basically single-handedly responsible for turning that ship.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah. And then the West Beach team got big. And
because, so like Dano, Jay Balmer.
Mm-hmm.
Bunch of you guys.
Paul Cullins, maybe.
Paul Culling. Yeah. That's right. Yeah, he was definitely on there. And then the next generation is like Devin and KY and all that. And by that point, it's humongous. And everybody everywhere wanted to have that stuff.
Right. And then, so that was wild. And I was involved, like I had my own line with West Beach and everything.
Yeah.
And designed stuff there for a couple of years. And we had.
Like you helped design the clothing?
Like I had my own line of clothes with West Beach.
Come on.
My signature was on the tag.
Wow.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, man.
We got to find that. Do you have some of it?
Somewhere. I've got like a room in there with 50 boxes.
Yeah.
We can go look through it, man.
That's
a trip.
So sick, dude.
I don't want to go near it.
Right. Of course.
Oh,
it's like a nightmare.
It's like 20 lives ago.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
But no, I do have all that weird stuff.
That's really, really cool.
I even have Craig's yellow pants.
No, you don't.
Yeah.
His actual.
The ones that were in Bored with the World.
Not the Look Lamar ones, but the Craig's Bored with the World yellow pants.
Bored with the World yellow pants.
Unbelievable, dude. How did you wind up with them?
Because I was down at his house in Mount Vernon picking up gear.
Yeah.
And his wife, Kelly Jo, was selling shit of Craig's.
That's incredible.
And I can't remember if I fucking paid for the stuff.
Sure. Like 20 bucks for a pair of pants.
She gave them to me.
Yeah,
I don't even remember.
Yeah.
But I've got the yellow pants from Bored with the World.
I can't believe that.
Which
That's
is one
amazing.
Of my favorite. It's probably my first and last snowboard movie that I ever cared about.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually sent. Okay. So I bought a demo Burton with the demo stamped in the bottom, secondhand from a shop. And then there was an ad in the magazine that said, send in your proof of purchase of a Craig Kelly snowboard for Bored with the World for free.
No way.
I sent them this handwritten receipt in the mail along with that. And then they wrote back and said, we're really sorry. It can't be like a used old board.
Oh.
And I was like, are you sure? And then they just sent me the video.
Oh, perfect.
And I watched that until I wore it out. People say that. I don't know that it's probably at my parents' place somewhere, but like Joe Satriani,
amazing.
Whole, like just everything Craig.
What was the next one after that? I was Bored with the World. And then the next one after that, I can't remember what it was.
Yeah. I don't even know, but I would know it. I'm sure
anyway.
It wasn't as important. The
Craig. We had the soundtrack of Bored with the World on tape.
Yeah.
And we would ride to it.
Surfing with the Alien. Yeah, you would just listen to
the whole soundtrack
songs.
Of the whole yeah. We listen to the movie while we were snowboarding.
Yeah, man.
And then we'd go home and it'd still be playing on the TV. We just push play and watch it over and over and over.
What a time, hey? What a time. Yeah. I have it completely memorized. Someone posted like, Jason Ford's got a girl in every port.
Right. I haven't heard those words for a while.
Yeah. And they were like, who's got a girl in every port? That was like, the question was like a quiz. I'm like, right. Yeah, dude. You could see in your mind's eye right now, Jacoby going, every port.
And that was the year before I got to World Cup is when Bored with the World came out.
Right.
And I'm like, Coach Craig's camps. I know Jason. I know, you know, Duck Boy. Sick. I know all these guys and, you know, from the, you know, the summer camps.
Yeah.
And from being a fan.
That's sick.
So then the next year I actually got onto the World Cup tour and I did half pipe for the first year. And then, because that was still a thing, like there was a lot of crossover in those days.
Yeah. Well, people have made a point of saying, you know, Ross is, he actually had a lucrative freestyle career as well.
I probably would have had a more lucrative career, but I was more interested in the racing side of it for some reason.
Well, you came from a ski racing background, you said.
So. I like the speed and I like the fact that I was up against the clock.
Right.
I really like that. I love freestyle and free riding. You know, and that whole, you know, it's a lifestyle. It's a culture. It's more than just, you know, riding pipe and doing tricks and stuff. Like, I really do love the free ride, you know, aspect of it. You know, that's like the passion, you know, for everybody, mostly everybody. I mean, there's a lot of park rats these days and some people in like Scandinavia that don't have anything else but a rail, you know,
sure.
to ride, but they're out there, right? Yeah. And there's passion there and they're doing it in freezing cold conditions.
Hell
and,
yeah.
And they're doing it anyway.
Yeah.
And
it's more segmented now than it's ever been.
Mm-hmm.
There's, you know, the weird thing is I had to actually ask someone, is racing in the Olympics still? Like, I don't even know.
Think it is.
It is. I think it is.
Is it?
Yeah, man. Yeah. The guy said, yeah, of course it is. Yeah, and I was like, oh, okay. I had no idea. Yeah, because for the racers, okay, Jacoby.
Because I know border cross.
Yeah, border cross took over.
We'll see. I can't.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
And then border cross also is falling a little bit out because of how expensive it is to build the courses, right? Like, so like a big air course, mm-hmm. you just build one big jump or two big jumps. Mm-hmm. Even a slope style course, you know, there's a little bit more there.
You should take the jumps out of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And just make it like full downhill. That's what snowboarding is awesome.
Oh, yeah.
It's full downhill.
Full downhill.
Like just...
just the fastest down the hill.
Crazy. Yeah. That's what those 200 centimeter boards are for.
Yeah.
You're not turning. You're just kind of changing direction a little bit.
Well, being from Whistler, you must have gone to World Cup events where you're like, holy shit, these places suck. Like Whistler is insane.
You'd get a different perspective. Yeah. Growing up in Whistler, you think all mountains are, you know, like that. And, you know, I'm from Vancouver and it would, you know, I thought that all of Canada had mountains stretching across it, like right from end to end.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, there was a few ski resorts in Europe that would compare like Chamonix and Val d'Isère and, you know, some of the bigger ones like Ischgl and in Austria, but Kitzbühel. I found it, you know, that the smaller resorts, I like the smaller resorts.
Yeah.
Better.
More character, just more fun.
You know, Whistler was just my backyard. Of course I'm going to ski Whistler.
Sure.
Like, you know, and now Whistler, it's still there. It's great. And I love Whistler. There's nothing else you can say about it. It's just
you got a run named after you there. That's sick as shit.
Ross is gold.
It's a good run too.
It's a sick run. We used to train. That's where we trained. And, you know, I tested out my board, there's a whole story behind, you know, which equipment I picked to go to the games with.
Right.
And that was, you know, the run that I tested a couple of boards on and turned out, you know, I picked the right one. But anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's go back just a little, because I really want to dive into the photo shoot for the cover of Trans World. You're on a Ketchup and Mustard, Craig Kelly. Are you fully set up at that point?
Burton Air.
Or are you on an Air? Okay, yeah.
I think.
Similar bass.
Yeah.
So is that the Air the next year or is it the Air from that year?
You got me on that one because I think I can only see the bottom of it. It's just around the corner. It's
yeah. Right. You still have the board or the picture?
Oh, man.
Probably both.
I have like 10 board bags around the corner. Each bag has like 10 boards in it.
That's insane.
A lot of race boards, but.
Yeah. There's some collectors that listen to the show.
Yeah.
That are frothing right now.
I've got all the Craig Kelly boards and a whole bunch of other weird things that are from the whole era, like old school bindings and.
Oh, rad.
Yeah. Weird plate bindings.
So did you help them design stuff at that time as well?
Burton?
Yeah.
No. I was fully just writing production.
Gotcha.
At the time with Burton. But then when I switched over, when I didn't switch over, but I made it to the World Cup tour.
Yeah.
I got a wild card to go to the World Cup tour because I was cleaning up an amateur. That season I had won the Canadian Amateur Championships, like the overall second in the half pipe, first in the race.
Rad.
And I, same thing for the U.S. Amateur Championships. The week before the Canadian Amateur Championships, I got first and second or first and first or something like that.
Holy shit.
Won that one. And, you know, then I was, okay, where do I want to go? The U.S. Pro Tour or do I want to do the European World Cup? So I did the World Cup. And
who are you on at that point? What sponsor takes you on?
Burton was sponsoring me going into the World Cup, but they didn't sponsor me. They're like, you know what? Our top guys are, you know, we've got Peter Bauer that I was going to be racing against,
yep.
Jean Nerva.
Yep.
There's Jose Fernandez. I don't remember if Jose was on Burton, but
he was on Hot,
you know, Hot or something at the time.
Yeah.
And they're like, didn't really have, they thought, okay, you're great on the BC tour. You know, okay, stay in BC and ride for Burton. And I'm like, no, man, I'm going on the World Cup.
Right. Cause Craig and Jacoby and probably even Keith.
I watch Bored with the World. It's in my head. I can't not go to the World Cup. I want to be in Japan. I want to do the, you know, what they did.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, that was showcased in that movie.
Yeah. It was like a dream.
So then do you take your Burton board and pay for yourself or do you get some other sponsor?
I take my gear.
Wow.
And my Burton, like the first Burton hard boots ever, right? And
yep.
All my gear to Europe and I race there and, you know, with not good luck, not good results, crappy results. You know, it's not the same thing. You know, World Cup was totally different. And, you know, I think I was 80th in my first race.
80th.
And, you know, it was tough to take, right? And I flew home after being there for a couple months and my mom had entered me because I was still living at home, right? And I was like 19 or 20 or something. And my mom's like, yeah, I entered you in the Mount Baker Bank Slalom.
Rad.
And I'd just been training in Europe for 2 months and then did a World Cup race or two. I can't remember anymore. And came home like feeling like, oh my God, like, should I even do this? Like, is this something like my friends were in university and shit, right?
Right.
And so I ended up doing the Mount Baker Bank Slalom. And since it was my first pro year, I entered in the pro category, or my mom entered me in the pro category. And lo and behold, you know, it's like the big showdown and I fucking win.
Nice, yeah. Dude.
And it was crazy. And to make it even crazier, it was Craig who got second.
Unbelievable.
And it was just unbelievable.
Yeah. And you beat him by like
a hundredth of a second. Oh. I don't know. You have to look at like the 1992 Mount Baker Bank Slalom results and see.
That's so sick. What board were you riding for that?
I used a PJ, I think.
Yeah. Which was directional,
I think I was on
right?
a PJ. Yeah, it was an asymmetrical race board. I had hard boots and a fucking speed suit on.
Nice.
Only guy.
Yeah. Everybody else is on their freestyle boards.
For sure, freestyle boards. For sure, Craig was wearing his like jacket and his pants and shit. And, but he was also a world champion racer.
Right.
On the World Cup tour.
Yeah, he had a speed suit.
Yeah. And he, you know, he, and I was just a young kid, right? And I knew Craig because I had worked for him for years.
Right.
On the, and I'm like, fuck you, Craig. I'm going to fucking, I'm coming into your backyard and we're friends, right? I know Craig.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I, you know, I went to his wedding and stuff like that.
How beautiful was that? In, it was on Mount Baker, right?
Yeah.
And the bagpipes playing and just.
Yeah. Yeah. Were you there?
No. Kelly Joe described it. And I was like, I've been up there in the summer to Heather Meadows.
Yeah.
It's fucking gorgeous.
Yeah. There's Mount, I think there was like, I don't know.
Table Mountain.
Some mountain yeah. in the background.
Yeah. Shuskin. Right.
And I was, yeah. It was beauty. I drove up there in my West Beach van.
Oh, sick.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. What, how amazing. What an amazing time.
Yeah. Right. And then years later, I'm at the, you know, this whole, my career, you know, progresses and Craig was on, you know, to be fair, he was at, you know, that was one of his last years on the World Cup tour and he kind of started doing more free riding, you know, after that. But
yeah. Yeah.
You know, it didn't matter to me because it gave me the momentum because I was like, you know, if you're going to do this, you got to at least win one pro race in your first season or else forget about it.
Right. And you've been 80th over there and you're like bumming.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh no.
And then you come back and win the bank slalom. You're like, okay, you know, I can do this.
So then I trained all, you know, and then I was still on the team and we were in Colorado training, you know, and Victoria Jalouse was on the team training.
Yeah. Which team is this? This is the...
This was the Rob Roy World Pro... I think it was called the World Pro Racing Team or
yeah,
something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So who else is on that team? Victoria.
Shannon Melhews.
Melhews.
Michelle yeah. Taggart.
Taggart.
You know, there was a couple of other names, I think. You know, even, yeah, we had some European, Gaia De Bainey. Her brother was world champion.
Mario
De Bainey.
Yeah. I met him at the bank slalom last year.
Right.
Dude's sick, dude.
Right,
good like, style, super
I'm
fast.
I'm racking my brain for these names right now.
Yeah, you're doing awesome, man. Yeah. Like these memories are, this is insane to me that you have crossed paths with Craig in such a meaningful way. Like,
yeah, it was, you know, and for me to really appreciate like as a fan first.
Right.
You know, and then to, I was a ski racer and I was a teenager and my friends were in Vancouver were, getting more and more like into city stuff. And
right.
I was kind of like, oh, I'm going to just go to the ski resort more. And snowboarding was that thing for me.
Yeah.
That got me kind of away from that scene. Right.
Of course.
And, you know, having guys like Craig that were older than me to look up to that were like, you know, driving Mitsubishi 3000 GTs and
yeah.
had their own houses. Like my dad worked like all day long, every single day to pay for the house.
Right.
And he's like ripping around in sports cars and shredding powder and going doing contests and
he was the very first.
I'm just like, I want to do that.
Yeah, he was the very first like pro, like
yeah,
like paid pro.
He took it serious.
He like, took it super serious.
He took it serious.
Yeah,
he took everything seriously. Like he was a really good surfer. I remember running into him in Seaside one time. I was out surfing.
Yeah,
and there was one other guy. It was Craig. I'm like, no way.
That's
I'm like, hey, Craig. I still can't think of anything to say because I'm like, even after my career is over and I'm like 28 now and I'm not like 18 anymore, I still can't talk to him properly.
Because you'd look up to him that much.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know his daughter now.
Amazing.
Talks like him.
I knew his sister.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
That Gillian.
Gillian, yeah.
Yeah. That's who Craig's daughter looks like. Like, exactly.
Right.
Because like, those two look, you know, like brother and sister.
I remember the story he took off in his van to South America and
yep.
had a family on the go.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Totally. Yeah. Yeah. And she's working at Burton right now.
No way.
Yeah, man.
Wow.
Jake took care of her whole life like right. a daughter.
Amazing.
Pretty cool.
Wow.
Very, very cool.
Heavy duty.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
I and better she roll at, another joint.
Yeah, and she worked at Baldface.
Really?
Yep, and her mom too. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a very, very cool. So let's get into your racing career because
sure.
it's obviously that's where you go from being, you know, a pro snowboarder in the scene to being the most famous pro snowboarder on the planet for a couple of years.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, Racing was, I knew going into racing, like this wasn't probably the most lucrative or the way I was going to get the most exposure or
sure.
how I was going to get into Warren Miller again.
yeah, or, yeah.
You know,
were in a Warren Miller film too?
I was the first snowboarder in a Warren Miller film.
Oh my God. Which one?
Steeper and Deeper.
Steeper and Deeper. You're in that.
Yeah. I have a one piece North Face suit.
Oh,
yellow.
Love it.
And I'm with two skiers.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, just dousing them in my rooster tails.
Oh, perfect.
And then I get my own solo shot coming down. Probably one of the first helicopter shots in free riding of a snowboarder. And if you're lucky enough to find a copy of Steeper and Deeper, at the very end of it, there's shots of me trying to land this enormous crippler on the wind lip.
Oh, I know. Yeah. No way.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so sick.
And that's when the credits are running.
The wind lip was so insane that existed.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
To this day, it's like a wave in Hawaii.
Yeah, man.
That's just sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
Just doesn't
stationary
even,
wave.
It's amazing.
Yeah. And Guy Motil, who shot your cover photo, shot that epic shot of
Doug.
And
that's where the cover was.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
The cover's off the wind lip?
Yeah.
Oh, that is so dope.
There's a wind lip that's famous on the glacier, the Blackcomb Glacier, and it's not that wind lip. It's a wind lip that is actually on the front of Seventh Heaven.
Seventh Heaven,
and
yeah.
And we called it G-Force back in the day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it was a frozen wave.
Yeah, there's a bunch of stuff in Snowboarders in Exile. They go up there.
Right.
Yeah.
And so that's Damon where the cover shot for Transworld that Guy took.
That's so sick.
Was from. And I remember Kevin Kinyer was there. And, you know, these guys were also like, I looked up to these guys because their names are on all the pictures of like,
all the pictures.
Terry Kidwell and Kurt Lamar.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And all these like Mike Ranquit and all these like hardcores. I'm like, Guy Motil. Like he's this guy. Who's this guy? Who's Guy Motil, right?
And what was he doing in Whistler? Was he up there?
Craig
for something?
Came to one of the races at Cypress Bowl.
Come on. No, we did not.
Yeah. Somehow the organizers got it wasn't a race. Well, it was a race and a half pipe event that he won. And I got West Beach to sponsor it. And they just gave away a whole pile of clothes or whatever. And the photographers came up with them because the plan was that he was going to do this competition and then go to Whistler for a photo shoot with Transworld.
Unbelievable.
And they came to the contest and they invited me because I was friends with Craig.
Yeah.
I coached with Craig's camps. Craig got me on Burton. And so Craig's like, why don't you come to Whistler and we're going to shoot.
And you get a cover shot.
And I got the cover.
Oh, dude, that's so sick.
I know.
Yeah.
It was just crazy. And Guy Motil.
Yeah.
The guy that was in all, he took the shots of all the other pictures. Like everything like is so meaningful to me. Like I was like the full Grom.
Yeah.
I totally worshiped these guys.
Yeah.
And so to me, it's, you know, it was definitely not taken for granted.
I'm going to use that photo for the episode. I'll put that as the thumbnail for,
yeah,
so people will see this before they listen to the show. Because that shot, like I said, it's real deal. It was on my buddy's wall.
Really?
You know, we would look at it. And then he got a West Beach headband. I got a knockoff, you know, neon yellow headband.
A different one?
Yeah, it was a bummer. But it was the same kind of, you know, like Velcro around the back.
You know what's funny is I had my contract with West Beach.
Yeah.
Right? I was supposed to get money for getting the cover of the,
of course,
the thing. But they're like, oh, you can't read. It doesn't say West Beach.
Nice try, guys. They owe
and
you
like,
for that.
Really?
Because we could read West Beach. We knew what it was.
I'm like, oh, man.
Yeah.
You know, seriously.
They played you.
Come on.
Come on, guys. Give them his money. Yeah, they're out of business now.
But everything happened for a reason.
Yeah, that's so sick.
Yeah.
So then you go full bore after that into racing. You were always into the racing, but, you know, you'd free ride for fun, I guess, and
yeah,
shoot photos if the opportunity
came up. What can I say? I was winning
up.
Half-pipe contests,
yeah,
left, right, and center.
Right, right, right.
I was winning all the races.
Yeah.
You know, and so I just, when I, and then when I did the, when I got onto World Cup, I did the half-pipe. Like, I was in the U.S. Open half-pipe competition against Sean Palmer and Terry Kidwell.
How'd you do?
Not top 10? No, maybe. No, I don't think so. At the time, the controversy was, was it Jimmy Scott do like 35 tricks?
Yeah, exactly.
Or should Palmer blast huge airtime?
Yeah.
And, you know, Jeff Brushy was in the middle.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And Craig was kind of in the middle too,
yeah,
but
yeah,
more technical. And so it was like this thing, right? And so I was like, really? Fuck.
Yeah.
This sucks. You know, but I did get a couple of pictures from the US Open in the halfpipe in Transworld.
Sick.
So that's cool.
Yeah,
that,
totally.
For me, and I had like my frantic, you know, safety leash on.
Yeah.
And anyway.
Was that buddies of yours? Frantic?
Yeah, Fran. I think his name was Fran. He was friends with the guys from Sessions.
Oh, nice.
And so I just wanted to have all the same sponsors as everybody else.
Yeah, of course, so, man.
I had Sessions.
Sessions? You were on Sessions?
Yeah, I was on Sessions for a bit.
Dude,
yeah.
That's an iconic.
Yeah. Before I went to World Cup, I was just getting, was I going to do it in the States or was I going to do it in Europe? And I ended up in Europe and... Yeah, I just wanted to ride with the best guys that I could.
Yeah.
So after that first year that I didn't do great, I got third in my first race the next year.
Oh, sick.
In a race against Dieter Haap.
Yep.
Was second. And I think, no, Dieter Haap won and Fawcett was second.
Oof.
And I was third.
Yeah.
And so that really, you know, boosted the confidence again.
Did you and Fawcett race together in any sort of team?
That was in
sense?
Bormio too, by the way.
Oh, sick. Bormio? Where the hell is that?
Italy.
Oh, sick.
Yeah, they have a sick downhill there.
Yeah.
Ski downhill.
Yeah. So is that your favorite kind of racing? Just like a wide open downhill?
I'm a speed event guy. That's,
yeah.
That's what I, Super G was my specialty.
Yeah.
I was good at all of the events, but yeah. GS was kind of, they eventually stopped doing Super G and
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, see, I don't know about the racing thing, but
yeah,
I mean, I can figure it out from context clues. Like the dual slalom is those tight little courses where you're racing head to head.
Yeah.
Giant slalom is GS. And then super giant slalom is like
a big GS.
Like just like going so
GS.
Fucking fast.
Yeah, that's what the long boards are.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Europeans protested against Super G because they didn't train it.
Oh.
And we did train it. Love to train it.
Yeah.
We trained
course.
It a lot. We just rode like that, actually.
Yeah.
To be honest. That's how we would ride, was just straight down the mountain.
As fast as you could go,
and
stable.
Just, you know, like using the terrain as the turn.
Cool.
And not like, turning.
Yeah.
You know, like when you see the guys in Alaska and they're just going down, that's how we would ride. Yeah.
That's insane. Did you get an Alaska trip? Did you get up?
I did.
No.
Yeah. I shot with Berger.
Sick.
In Alaska and got the cover of Transworld Snow.
Yeah.
Which is their free ride
magazine. Snow Life or something like that?
Yeah. I think.
Yeah.
Was it Transworld Life or something?
I think it was called Snow Life.
Snow Life? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's sick.
Yeah. And we rented two like 40-foot motorhomes and we drove from Anchorage
oh my
to
God.
Middle of, we were at the Chuga mountain range.
Who else went on that trip with you guys?
A girl by the name of Athena.
Yeah.
And she was a great rider. And a guy that I don't remember his name right now.
Poor guy.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
To be honest.
Yeah, it was pre-Brian Savard because Brian Savard went with Berger maybe 95, 96-ish around that K2 time.
It wasn't Brian for sure. I would have remembered that.
Yeah.
But I can't. I should. I know that I can see his face. I'm not good with names, believe it or not.
Yeah, well, you've pulled
rattled
some,
off a bunch of names.
Yeah, you pulled some deep cuts there. So pre-98, when's the first hint that there's going to be
94.
Snowboarding in the Olympics? Did they?
1994.
94, did they do a...
They told us that we were going to compete in 98 as a full medal event, no demonstration, nothing.
There was no demo?
No. So 94 was the, Lillehammer?
Yes.
And
what did they do at Lillehammer?
No snowboarding.
Nothing. It was...
It was nothing.
So they should have done either 98 as an exhibition year.
That's
or 94
what normally would happen.
As an exhibition year.
What was happening, though, was there was like a recession.
Mm.
And the IOC was also, the Olympics were getting less viewers on television.
Got it.
Because not so many younger kids that were now, you know, 15, 20, were watching ski jumping or cross-country skiing or curling or whatever.
Right.
And so they're like, fuck. And the World Cup tour was killing it. Even before I was on the World Cup tour, Craig and all those guys were killing it.
Jose
and there was
Fernandez,
like a huge
all those guys.
Party. Yeah. The guys were driving Lamborghinis and shit.
Come on.
There was so much money in the 80s.
No way.
This was a gong show. And the World Cup tour was so big. And the IOC caught, obviously they're from Europe too. And Europe's a small place. And they were like, holy shit, like we need those guys. They're fans and they're what they bring to the table.
That energy, that
to
young,
the Olympics.
Exciting
so
energy.
That's why snowboarding, it didn't just get there, you know, because we fought for it,
right.
Although we did.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was so, the fans, you know, really made it come true. Like we were at, for example, in Innsbruck, there was this huge ski jump from the Olympics that's still in Innsbruck.
Yeah.
And it's like a Coliseum kind of, right?
Yeah.
And we do this like Aaron style
show.
Was
it the Red Bull one?
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah. I used to go to all of those and watch them because we'd be there racing. And
right.
It was always during when we weren't racing.
And it was like popular.
Over Christmas or
it
whatever.
Was exciting. It was
it
like
was crazy.
I could remember seeing 100,000
people would come to it and it would be like people would get trampled. And
come
one
on.
Year, yeah, I think 1 year it was bad. 1 year. And,
jeez.
So anyway, that's, you know, the IOC people live around Innsbruck and they know about shit like this that's going on, right?
Yeah,
and they want,
yeah.
They want a piece of that. And so that's how, you know, so in 94 they said, yeah, full metal sport in 98.
And then did that was the very first hint of FIS as a governing body for snowboarding?
At the time, we didn't really, we didn't think that. And then I think it was maybe the beginning of the next season,
yeah,
that we started hearing rumors of a secondary tour and that they were going to pay expenses. And
it was going to split the tour down the middle, right? Because if you were a hardcore snowboarder and you were like, fuck the Olympics, or not even so much that, like just your friends were running these events.
Well, on the World Cup tour, for example, like let's say you're riding for like Oxbow, right? Or Keemsay was one of the big sponsors of the, you know, they would sponsor the World Cup tour.
Right.
And have like their star riders.
Of course.
At the tour and paying them six figures or more, maybe seven
Come
figures.
Come on, really? Yeah. Racers.
Racers and the freestyle guys.
Yep.
Like, all the top guys were paid to run on the original ISF tour.
Right.
It was simple as that.
Yeah.
There was nothing else more.
And the events were
less complicated than that.
Events were fun. They were creative. They were rider driven, a lot of them.
Yeah. The riders were on the board of directors and it was all the riders for the riders. And
so cool.
You know, we try. And then the new Olympic tour came with all new coaches. And so we had like two world champions and we had two, all this other stuff. And so obviously all the guys that weren't in the top 20 or 30 on the World Cup tour, you know, went over and all of a sudden these guys that were never pulling better than 20th were all of a sudden going for the win.
For world champion.
And so I kind of,
wow.
And so when Nagano came, the media didn't know anything about that.
No.
And they just followed the history from that tour. And of course I didn't even exist on that tour.
Wow.
And so I slipped in under the radar and I wasn't a favorite or anything
no.
going into the
How did you How did you get in without doing the FIS events?
I eventually started doing the FIS
you
events.
You had to do a couple FIS events.
Yeah. Right at the end.
Just to get enough points to get in.
Yeah. I raced, I think, one full year of FIS.
Yeah.
And I remember the guys that I knew that were on the FIS tour like, it's not going to be that easy. You guys think you're going to come in and clean up on our tour. And,
we've
got coaches too.
Yeah, yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. And I'd be lucky to win one race a year on the World Cup tour.
Right.
you know, and make a bunch of top 10s. Like I was a top 10 guy. I would win one race and maybe make third or second and maybe once or twice else. And that was it.
Gotcha.
Win the first two races of the season on the new tour.
Sick.
Right? Back to back. I never win two races in a row.
Right.
Ever.
Right.
And so they shut up after that. And
oh, unreal.
That was my debut. But
was Fawcett on that tour already?
I'm not sure.
Because he was world champ at that point.
He was of a U.S. pro tour guy.
Yeah.
And would come to some World Cup events.
Got it.
In Europe, like the World Championships.
Because he was basically unbeatable going into those Olympics.
He was always unbeatable.
Yeah. Because he was one of these first guys to train at an actual training facility in Vermont, right? He went to
Sugarloaf or something.
Yeah, wherever he went, it's where Jeremy Jones
secret training.
Yes, yeah. And
fuckers.
And he
Jeremy was a good rider too.
Yeah, he got fucking good. And Jeremy was a good racer, right? You would have raced against Jeremy.
He was a diehard racer.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm a little surprised that Jeremy went so hard into free riding and didn't stay a little bit more as a coach, maybe.
Sure.
I thought he would have been a good coach.
Yeah.
But anyways, he's an amazing rider also.
Yeah. And he emerged as a world leader in free riding, I think.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. I think partially because of his affiliation with his brothers who do TGR.
Right.
So like they were able to make professional movies and get budgets. And so he was, you know, like able to be that guy.
At a production crew.
Totally. Yeah. And then sell it to sponsors.
I always thought
then,
he was pretty organized to figure all that shit out. Yeah, so that answers a few questions.
Yeah. So he used to do Alaska trips with his brothers from the Vermont training camp, right? And like, so he would go straight from training. The training would end. He would go up to Alaska. They'd do a trip. They'd do heli and they'd film stuff. And
what I'd like to do is ride with Jeremy.
Yeah.
And shoot with Jeremy.
Yeah.
On skis. He can ride his board.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's sick. You're at that level, you think. Like, you could go ride Alaska
on skis.
Yeah, I fucking love it, dude. I always looked at free riding and thought, oh, if I was there, I could do that. And then I've been to some gnarlier places and I'm like, nope.
Yeah, I did Alaska one time with Eric, like I said, and it was scary. I was scared, right? But I can imagine you get used to it.
Sure.
I was getting used to it by the time I left. And hey, Rocco.
Hey, buddy.
You know, I don't know if like Jeremy's like first race of the year or first run of the year in Alaska. Is he scared?
Oh,
or,
I bet.
Or is it just like, oh, no problem?
No.
Like, I think every run,
yeah,
there is an element of fear just because of the sheer how steep it is. Like,
many,
it's dangerous.
Many guests of the show have said that it's impossible to sleep up there.
Right.
Because you know what you got to do. You know what you're on the hook for the next day. You're going out in a helicopter and you got to pick something that's super gnarly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to give him the headphones so he can hear himself?
You want to hear yourself?
Yeah.
Okay.
What's your name and how old are you?
And what's your name?
Rocco.
All right. And how much do you love your dad?
100.
100.
Of course. And are you going to snowboard this year?
Well, I don't know, boy.
Yeah? And do you ride motorbikes?
Yeah.
Oh,
a
cool.
Dirt bike.
Yeah, I see your dirt bike jump in the backyard. Do you jump over that jump?
No.
It's too scary?
Yeah, when it broken, but Dad jumps
over it.
That's so awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Thanks for being on the show, Rocco.
Thank you.
Okay, say bye.
Bye.
It's like constant. But
how old is he? He's five?
So, yeah, he's five.
He's at that age.
Yeah he's fully charged.
100% fully charged. Will you put your kids into a training program for ski racing or snowboard racing or anything like that?
I wouldn't put them into it. So they're going into the little carvers, since you brought it up.
Yeah.
They're going into the little carvers. They don't have a choice.
Right.
They're going into it. It's like...
What's little carvers?
Basically, it's like the beginning of ski racing.
Okay.
And they just basically ski around the mountain.
Yep.
It's not really formal. There's no real training, but they do a lot of skiing.
And it's on a schedule, like they go every Tuesday or something.
Yeah, it's on the weekends, Saturday, Sunday.
Right, right, right.
And they ride
both days.
A couple
awesome.
Of mornings, you know, hours in the morning and then lunch and then a couple hours. So it's a full day, five
Sick.
Hours. And, you know, they just get great at skiing so that if they want to go down that racing path still and they enjoy the time and the competition, that's there for them. If they want to do the free ride thing, then they're going to be six skiers, right? So that's kind of the...
He's come back with a crown on and he is holding you hostage with a gun. Do you want to go up and get them set up?
Let me get them set up
yeah,
on something.
Let me pause it.
Okay. You have to use psychological advantages. Over
yeah,
them.
Totally. Bribery.
Yeah, all kinds of different blackmail.
Yeah.
Don't
totally.
Tell mom.
Get that right in front of me. There we go. Perfect. Yeah, man. I've got two kids. Mine are 20 and 17.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's been a while since it's been that dynamic, but
right.
I know it. That's why I'm like, put the headphones on. He'll be into it, man.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
On.
Yeah. Awesome. So I think we're in the middle of the transition where Fizz is fucking everything up, essentially. And then, oh yeah, we were talking about, you know, you free riding in Alaska with Jeremy. You could do it.
Yeah, I can't remember who I was with. Omar.
Omar Lundy.
Omar.
Sick.
I remembered.
Yep. I remember that trip.
Omar. Sorry, buddy.
Yeah, that's dope.
No,
dude.
I just haven't seen you in a while. That's all.
Yeah, I mean, that's over 20 years ago.
Of course I remember the girl's name.
Were you a ladies' man the whole way through? Was there drama with racer girls and trying to date people?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I was. There was some girls on, you know, tour and a few... One or two towns in Europe, and
yeah,
and nothing bad ever happened. You know,
right,
it was all
right,
good,
right?
Yeah, it was all fun, and you know, but yeah, it got, you know, you could see how it could get complicated, right? Like,
oh yeah, you're on a team, and then and all the guys are going after all the girls,
mm-hmm.
right? I would imagine.
Oh, yeah. Like Kevin Delaney was on my team, right?
Oh, yeah.
Dave Dowd was on my team
at one
point.
Oh, wow, Dave Dowd.
Right?
Yeah.
And so they were all in Europe with us.
Sick.
And like, yeah.
Kildy? Like, was Kildy in?
Yeah, Mike.
Yeah.
Mike Kildevall. Yeah, yeah, he was floating around the tour. I think he was on like the Cross M team for a while, and then he was on some other different... independent teams or whatever.
Yeah, and you mentioned at the beginning that you were good friends with Jacoby. You must have trained
Jacoby.
With him a bunch or at least raced against him
a lot. He was a Burton rider back in the day. And so he was a big name to me coming into the scene.
Totally.
And so, yeah, I was pretty, I was happy to meet Mike and to get to know him.
When you were talking about the pro thing versus am thing, like, Burton seemed to take it pretty seriously in the beginning. Like, you know, Jacoby almost didn't turn pro with Burton because he was afraid that would ruin his chances of going to Olympics if it ever happened.
Right. Yeah, there was that worry back then.
Yeah.
That's why I was getting paid by Burton in snowboards instead of in money, which...
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I even remember placing in there was this Koala Springs competition
Koala
in Whistler.
Springs. Yep.
And I placed in the money in that race against all these guys. And I didn't take the money because... I was amateur.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
So what happens to the money? Goes to the next guy?
I don't know.
Oh, my God.
I went up to it, and I went and, you know, accepted my award, but then I gave the check back again after he gave it to me.
That's incredible.
It was just so weird.
That is weird.
We didn't know what we were doing.
No. It was the Wild West.
Yeah. Nobody knew anything.
Yeah.
It was like this big political statement. Like, I didn't even know what I was doing.
Yeah.
I was giving away money.
Yeah.
It was stupid.
Probably a good amount, too,
this
back in
Daisy,
those days.
By the way. This is one of my cats.
Daisy
just jumped
cat.
Up onto the table.
Sniffing the weed.
Yeah. But.
So let's talk about the Olympics and how that all goes down. So you weren't favored to win, but you were like, you were.
I was ranked top three in the world on the ISF tour.
On the ISF tour, you were top three.
Which was the tour.
Which was the actual tour.
Yeah.
Fawcett was number one on whatever tour he was on.
He was number one on every tour.
Every tour.
He was top three in each tour, probably.
Yeah.
No, but he didn't compete in enough World Cup races to have the points.
Right.
It had nothing to do with his level of talent.
He was unbeatable at the time. I remember that.
We dueled lots of times. He beat me more times than I beat him.
Sure.
Let's put it that way.
Yeah, sure. And the failure of his plate, oh my God.
I was in the shop with him the night before when I saw him twist the helicoil and break the bond with the epoxy.
Oh no.
And I'm like, bro, you got to T-bolt it. You got to cut the P-Tex and shit and T-bolt
you gotta
that T-bolt motherfucker.
That today.
And I had the T-bolt and I had everything that he would have needed to do that.
No way.
He tried to re-glue it.
Because he'd been on that board for longer than the life of the board, right?
He probably doesn't want me saying.
No, I'm sure he'd be fine.
Mark's, I'm never had any issues with
it's Mark. 22 years later. You know what I mean? Like when I talked about
I didn't have
them,
too many issues with very many people.
Right, right. yeah. And no issues. No issues with Mark? Some whatever,
no issues.
Regular.
Like he was a cross-M guy.
Yeah.
And so I was a little bit insulted that they wouldn't let me joined the team.
Sure.
But I didn't think it had anything to do with Mark.
Of course. Right.
Or.
And it would have been sick.
It was the whole weed thing back then.
Right.
They knew I smoked weed.
Even the weed thing back then was.
I think that's what it was.
Was a nightmare.
I think it still was. I think it was for the team because I think they voted. And I only bring it up because it's interesting.
It is interesting.
I don't feel like personally like. You know,
do you think these guys
anymore.
Thought there
I'm
was
good
a,
now.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think these guys thought there was a performance enhancing component to marijuana?
We didn't see it that way.
But do you, why would they vote against it?
Because of the stigma.
So it was just like, we don't want this guy on the team because what happens if he wins and then they test him and it's weed and it's on us.
Like we're traveling around the world.
We're traveling around the world. Right.
You know, we're going to Canada, to the States, to Japan, to, you know, Ross is hooking up everywhere.
Okay. So there's a moment
it wasn't
where
just me. You, there was a group of us that liked to smoke weed wherever we were as much as possible.
Sure.
And it wasn't like the whole Canadian team.
No.
And or any of the teams. It was one guy, a couple guys from the Austrian team. There was the Italians like Mattioli and those guys, you know, Lisco.
Nice.
Yeah.
So you find your people while you're on the tour. You're like, let's smoke some weed. It's not
for
a big deal.
Yeah. They would hook us up in Italy when we were there or Austria. They would hook us up, you know, if we were in Austria. And then in Whistler, we would hook whoever wanted to get more baked than they've ever been in their life.
How was the weed in Vancouver and Whistler compared to everywhere else in the world?
Well, you couldn't get weed anywhere else in the world.
Right.
In the States, all you could get was this Mexican Seeds a Million.
Yeah.
Sticks and stems.
Yeah.
And
repressed, like gross brown.
Maybe sometimes there was like the dank, they called it, and they smoke it out of these big bowls.
Yeah.
Right. But the weed
like
that we
Oregon
thought,
outdoor or something like that?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
It was always like wet. Like you could never grind it, you know.
It's just stuck together,
you know. But
and then when people would come to Vancouver, and I'll text them and ask them that I'm all right to say this, but like smoking with Nico and Terrier, for example, I'm like, ooh, there's tobacco in this, and for the very first time
that
in
was
my
the
life,
thing in Europe.
Someone said the reason was the weed's too strong. They're like, I can't smoke the
weed
too straight.
No, it's crazy to smoke a straight joint.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
and
what
I'm
they
like,
would say.
Oh, God, are you joking? Come on.
Yeah. No, it's sacrilege to smoke a whole, like just pure weed. That's drug abuse.
It's a waste,
in Europe,
right?
Yeah,
sure,
or something
sure.
like that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's better to mix it with tobacco, like healthier.
Isn't that funny?
Or something
healthier. Yeah. It goes longer and you don't get as baked.
Like,
you
don't smoke so much then.
Yeah, yeah. You know? Roll smaller joints or smoke a bit of it, put it out and smoke it a little bit later.
Yeah. You know, it's a fun culture. Like we were obviously smoking mostly hash when we were in Europe.
Right. Because you can pocket that and you can get it there.
That's all you could get.
Or it comes out of Afghanistan in that hole. Yeah.
We could only get hash. That's all, you know, really. And then we had a couple of times.
Hash is good though. Hey, like, yeah.
Oh,
hash
stuff.
Yeah. Like the real, like soft,
I remember being
good
cooped
hash.
Up in Austria in a farmhouse.
Yeah.
In the attic of the farmhouse where I was living.
Yeah.
Listening to Frank Zappa on this wicked Bose stereo thing with my pipe and my hash, and I was in Europe and isolated from the whole wide world. Just the whole experience became better with weed.
Sure.
You know, and of course we left, you know, Whistler not thinking anything about the weed. We're just like, oh, now we're going to Europe.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden it's like, oh, I really wish we had weed. Didn't even think of that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, can't sleep. You have jet lag. You can't eat properly.
Sure.
You feel really weird. You don't know anybody.
Right.
And finally you hook up and you get the weed and everything just makes sense.
Yeah.
Again.
Social anxiety and all that, being in a different place. And then all of a sudden you smoke a bit of weed and
you're not bored anymore. You're not like in Europe by yourself anymore.
Totally.
You know, all of a sudden you got your tunes. Hey, you're going to this race. You're baked. You know, it's like it all of a sudden turns into this whole.
For 22 years since 1998, when you became the most famous snowboarder in the world, if people ask me, because my family will, like, oh, you ever meet Ross Rabagliati? My story was, at that opener of the Board of Authority on 4th Avenue,
right.
I had weed with my friend Anson. We were smoking all the time. We offered you weed. You want to smoke with us? And you're like, no, thanks.
No. Yeah, I can believe it.
I was like, you know what? I don't know if he's a chronic weed smoker. I know that I offered him some and he said no.
I think my dad was there.
Yeah.
Right.
That
and
makes
a
sense.
Bunch of family was at this opening and I was like Tim's star rider.
Absolutely.
Right?
You were. And, you showed up as an athlete. It was like on the flyer, like
right.
Ross Bagley.
And
then
I went off and competed that year and won a whole bunch of stuff, starting off with that third place.
Oh, wow.
And
that was that
Vormier.
Year.
Yeah.
Oh, sick.
And, that was like the hardcore prohibition at the time.
Yeah.
And smoking me, you know, it was part of my life and so was prohibition and being freaked out about it.
Hell yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And not wanting to get paranoid where I'm going to have to go back in and it's like a fucking wine and cheese party.
It was.
And right.
Yeah.
And I got relatives there too.
Yeah, dude.
Like, it was already crazy enough for me just without being baked.
Yeah. And we were just
to
kids.
This day. Like, yeah, I don't know. Like, it's different for me now. Like,
sure.
It's my job now and
it's legalized.
We've brought it to legalization.
Totally.
And we've seen this whole new era, right? 2.0.
Yeah, man.
And so times have changed, but back then it was different.
It was on the DL, man.
Oh.
Yeah. So that was like, that would have been one time in your life where you're like, no, for sure. I'm not smoking weed right now.
Yeah.
Especially not like some random joint with a couple of dudes. Who knows what's in there?
Yeah. If I was like a random dude there.
Yeah.
Like you guys, I fucking totally would have been baked.
Yeah. Right? You hear that, Anson?
Right?
The mystery is solved. It wasn't because he doesn't smoke weed. It was just a weird time.
And at the time too, I wasn't, smoking from like 5 o'clock in the morning until I would go to sleep like I do now.
I got you, dude.
And so probably I maybe would have smoked some weed that day, maybe not.
Right.
And would have gotten really, I would have needed to be at home to smoke weed, I think.
I got you, man.
At that point.
That makes total sense. Yeah. BOA had some pretty cool stuff.
Yeah.
When I moved out here, I bought like a flannel. They had some kick-ass flannel at that time.
It was kind of starting up again.
Yeah. Oh, it's BOA back?
Kind of.
Good, man.
They hit me up on Instagram.
Oh, sick, dude.
I think it's Tim fucking with me, but it's the same designs as before.
Yeah, they'd be good.
There's
now.
There's t-shirt stuff.
T-shirts and probably a flannel.
Yeah.
I should buy a BOA flannel.
Tim's an intuitive guy.
Yeah.
And he would have picked up on this whole online thing right now.
Sure.
And he's running with that.
Yeah.
That shit.
All right. So you get to the Olympics. Let's hammer this out. You are favored to medal.
Everyone there knows that they're not going to leave until I'm coming down. All the racers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whatever the reporters thought.
Right.
The racers knew who the guys were that were going to maybe win.
Yeah.
And we all knew who could maybe win.
Yeah.
And it was no secret that
I was excited for Canada because I thought we're going to have a 1-2.
Mark Fawcett and JCJ.
We might have had a 1-2-3, man.
Every single person on the tour knew those two guys could win.
Yep.
They also knew that I have won races before.
You could pull it out.
I'm
dude.
Not as winningest as those guys.
Sure.
But I fucking won races before.
And you won the fucking Olympics,
every
dude.
Single one of those guys.
Yes.
And so it wasn't inconceivable, right?
Right.
And And so, yeah, we could have stacked the podium.
Oh,
we had a stacked team.
Absolutely.
Like, really, we did. And JCJ won the first run.
Yep.
Right? Mark was leading in the split times.
Totally.
When he had his
blowout
miscalculation on his bindings and equipment and that whole thing. And then, yeah.
So, you know, I've heard this story from you before. You knew that you were going to be tested, or that you had already been tested.
3 times already tested.
Yeah. So you knew that they had a positive marijuana test on their hands.
No.
Oh, you didn't know?
No.
Oh, I thought you knew.
No.
I thought you knew and you hightailed it the fuck out of there.
No. Okay. Well, I was referring to 3 tests that I had done prior to Nagano.
Okay.
That had not come back positive.
Oh, okay.
As far as I knew.
Right.
That I didn't know.
Yeah, because if they would have come back positive, they would have said, hey, Ross, you're
failing for cannabis.
Yeah.
You know, whatever, you know, change whatever you're doing. And so what I was doing was I wasn't smoking weed.
Right.
Around all my friends who were smoking weed.
Got it.
And so I could have, you know, socially distanced
myself a little bit more
from them if I knew I was testing positive in these tests. But anyway, I did 3 tests leading up to Nagano. Nothing came back to me.
Got it.
Nothing, you know, came to my attention. And
right.
So I obviously made the team and I got to Nagano. And I wasn't thinking that I had a problem the night before the race.
Right.
I wasn't like, oh, fuck, I hope I don't fail my drug test. I didn't think that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they random drug test, right? They don't test everybody.
Well, but they once test you all win, the podium guys.
Once you win, there's somebody who's on you. My buddy did this for the 2010 Olympics.
Right.
They're on you and they can't, basically they got to look at your wiener when you piss.
Yeah, like, they do.
They got to watch and make sure that piss is coming out of you.
Yeah.
And you didn't go anywhere between when you won and when you pissed.
They're looking.
Yeah.
They look.
They're watching. Yeah. How is that even?
It's like two possible performances back to back. First, you have to win.
Yeah.
And then you have to pee.
That's unbelievable.
So that was funny. One of the guys couldn't pee.
Yeah. I would have an issue with somebody watching me whiz.
Yeah. Couldn't pee.
Yeah. And so what do they do? They
just sat there. Crap first and then he peed.
All right. So at this point.
And that was in the finish line.
Yeah.
So we had our little award ceremonies, like the fake one.
Yeah.
Where they have a podium in the snow.
Yes.
And then they took us straight to the army tent.
Yep.
Right there. And then we did the pee test there.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so at this point, are you kind of stressing? Are you thinking, fuck.
Partying.
You're partying.
Feeling awesome.
Yeah.
Just won.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, man.
Why would I be stressing?
You won the very first Olympic gold medal for snowboarding.
Yeah, I wasn't stressing about anything.
Yeah, you're stoked.
I won.
Yeah.
Fuck. I had nothing on my mind other than the race. Like, I didn't have a worry in the world about any drug tests or peeing or nothing.
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 You do the test, you're like,
it was amazing.
We're stoked.
It was incredible.
Yeah, that must have been the best night of your life.
Absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
All night and the next morning was fun until the coaches came in the room.
Yeah.
But before that, mm-hmm. it was amazing. I had one weird instance after the official award ceremonies where I got my medal.
Yeah.
And I was walking from the venue across the street, which was a red carpet, thousands of people on both sides.
Yeah.
And there was like a bunch, like Japan was crazy, right?
Yeah.
Snowboard fans, like crazy fans. And just Olympic fans and sports fans were there. And someone reached out of the crowd and grabbed my medal and tried to, and they went, and pulled it as hard as you could ever pull it.
Come on.
And right there in the crowd, and people like screamed, and then they didn't get it. And then it was like, whoa, what happened, right?
That's insane.
It was so crazy.
What kind of person was it? Did you get a look at
them? No, just an arm came out of the side and just grabbed a hold of it, and I just had got it.
Yeah.
And was walking across the thing with some guys from Nike, believe it or not.
That's insane.
Yeah.
So are those medals made of gold? Is it here? Is there a gold
upstairs.
Medal?
It's just upstairs. I can like run up and grab it.
Yeah, let's see it.
Okay.
Can we do that?
Yeah. We'll be right back.
Thanks, dude. Did you find the medal or did you get
it? I got it.
I can't believe it. I'm so psyched.
comes in this. It didn't come in this little pouch, but
somebody make that for you? Oh, that's a great sound, the little click.
Yeah, it's this leather pouch. Looks like Robin Hood.
It does. Kind of. It looks like something from the old days. Steal from the rich and give to the poor. But
I liked it because I had this belt thing, because I was always paranoid about losing the thing, because I lose sunglasses like crazy.
Oh, yeah.
So I've been constantly losing and finding this thing ever since I got it.
Seriously? So there's been times where you're like, where's my medal?
Yeah, the other day, like the day before yesterday, I called my mom. I'm like, go look in the fucking cabin. And fucking call me right away.
And it was there?
No.
No.
It wasn't there, but it was in the pocket of that Pro Mix bag right there. That outside pocket.
That's unbelievable.
Because I don't know what to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
What happens if someone breaks in or whatever?
Absolutely, dude.
I don't know. Anyway, when I was just, so here it is.
Oh, my God.
Here, put it in this. Hold it like that.
Okay.
You can. There's two sides.
Is it real gold or it's gold flake or gold coated or something?
Yeah, it's not. It's not solid.
It's beautiful, dude.
Thanks.
How cool! Holy fucking crap!
The one side is this black lacquer, shiny. With these distant gold mountains
gold
on it,
inlay,
with gold
yep.
Olympic rings on it.
And it's got like kind of it's got a snowboarder in the style of the Olympic, you know, like.
The official Olympic symbol for snowboarding, for alpine snowboarding. And that was the first time too that they ever put that the medals were individualized.
So sick.
For each sport.
The 98 Olympic Winter Games, Nagano. It's beautiful, dude. Thanks for pulling that out. That's insane.
I recently did a photo shoot for OVO.
Yeah.
And they, before the shoot, they had the medal re-golded.
Oh, sick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, can we polish the medal? I'm like, yeah. And it comes back looking like this. I'm like, no way. That's what it looked like when it was brand new.
And it's been through you taking it out and looking at it and showing people for 22 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. It looks basically brand new. I would have guessed that you'd take it out, you know, once a year or something.
Yeah. You know, I pretty much do.
Yeah.
I never really take it out, you know, for that.
Dude, it's so sick.
For anything. But yeah.
You're the very first Olympic gold medalist for snowboarding in the world that ever existed. How fucking amazing is that? How did it change your life? Actually, you know, in the story, we're just getting to the point where the coaches. So, do the coaches call you in and say, "Hey, Ross, we gotta talk"?
Yeah, we were still partying from the night before.
Yeah.
You know, the people were coming and going out of the room that wanted to see the medal.
Had Letterman contacted you yet?
That was Leno.
Leno.
Who reached out.
They reached out like right away, or was it like after the controversy?
It was the day I got the medal back.
Right.
And I don't know if somehow they got the news and then they're like, let's get him on. Or they were like, let's get him on anyway.
Either way.
I don't know.
Right.
But it seemed like because I got it back that they were inviting me on, because it was like this big, at least in Canada, there was a lot of fanfare around. Support, you know.
Yes,
for me.
Yeah. And, okay. So what happens? They.
So the coaches come in and they're like, "Everybody, get out," and, Ross, you sit down. You stay here.
Were you at that point just like stressed? Like what the
I
fuck
instantly
is this all about?
Became stressed.
Yeah, man.
Instantly had like the shaky leg feeling. You
oh,
know,
God.
Like the cops walking up beside you, kind of thing.
Yep.
And you know, just the tone, like everybody get out. Like,
yeah.
And so anyways, that kind of kick started the morning from there was learning that I had failed a drug test. They're like, oh, you tested positive.
And did they tell you for marijuana?
No.
Oh,
they
God.
Said at the time they didn't know yet and that I had tested positive for something. And if I had any idea what it was, right? And I'm like, it's weed. And I said, that's what I, you know, to boil it down, that's what I said. I said the only thing it could be was that.
Yeah, I didn't take any. You're not taking steroids. You're not. No. You're not juicing. You're just. You've smoked weed in the last however long. We all know it stays in your system forever.
Well, now we do. And we sort of knew that at the time too. It was, you know, limited knowledge about what weed.
24 hours was something that people would say. I remember
we were going on
that.
The 3 month bet.
3 months, even.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah. So we basically, I stopped smoking weed officially like in April of 97, right?
Got it.
And so that gave me, I smoked a little bit after the World Cup tour because that tour was the year before the Olympics. I was on the New Fist tour, which was the first time we had drug testing, which is where I was doing, I didn't do any drug tests on the tour, but that's where my drug testing came about from.
Sure.
That leading after that. So anyways, I stopped smoking in April. Maybe I even did some drug tests between April and Nagano that I tested positive from when I was smoking weed in April.
Got it.
But that never came up.
Got it.
Still nothing came up. And anyways, so I'm in the room. Coaches are like, you tested positive. They send me down to Nagano on a bus, 2 hour ride by myself with one other dude. You know, from, you know, freestyle, probably, I think. He was a half pipe guy who I didn't know.
No way.
And he's like, hey, man, he's at the Olympics.
Yeah.
He's like, hey, man, how's it going? Like, fucking right. This is, you know, what are you doing? Where are you going? I'm like, oh, I just fucking won and he was like, totally shell shocked what I just told him.
Yeah, of course he is.
We ride down for 2 hours. You know, we don't say nothing because I'm in shock too.
No security or anything? Were you thinking of just like booking at that point?
Not yet.
Not yet.
That thought crossed my mind.
You were in shock.
After a while.
Well, yeah, like, you were in shock.
When I got to Nagano, it was like if this was you and you're like, what's it going to be like? You know, Ben Johnson.
Sure.
There's going to be reporters. Mm-hmm. Sure enough, it was like a frenzy when I got there.
Insane.
The bus couldn't even get in.
No way.
Right? And I'm like, you know, the new scandal.
And is the other guy going like, holy shit, this is for you?
Yeah. At this point, he's disappeared.
He's like, I'm out.
No, I don't even know what happened to him. He crawled out the window. I don't know if I was...
Yeah.
Everything was blocked out for me at that point.
Yeah.
And I was surrounded by, I couldn't get out of the bus. And then the Canadian, the COA guys all surrounded me, like, you know, the whoever they were, and got me into the hotel, like pushing against like all the reporters. And
were people like yelling, like, Ross, what is,
you know, yelling out questions.
Yeah. Ross, just one question.
Yeah. There's, that
like, had you had that the night before with the gold medal win, like where people were like, what's it feel like to be the first Olympic champion? No.
Well, I did do like you know, CBC Sports.
Yeah, you did press,
right?
Like they're like, hey, you got to come down and
I did all the press.
Yeah, but they weren't like crowding you.
No, it was all controlled. Like we had to show our credentials.
Right.
People were like shaking your hand and you'd be signing something as you walk by and
sick,
stuff like that.
Sick.
But it wasn't like there was fans around.
Yeah.
Or public, I should say.
Yeah.
Everyone had credentials and stuff like
that. Gotcha.
So, but yeah, it was like, you know, all these famous people that you see on CBC Sports that have always done the Olympics forever, ever since you've ever watched them. Now you're the guy, right?
Oh my God.
So that was the night before.
Cool.
And then, I don't know. I think they interviewed me again, like the next day I was on again.
Yeah.
And I lost it, but hadn't gotten it back yet. And then
when you go in, they're like, hand over the medal.
They were supposed to have asked me for the medal, but they never did.
You had it in your pocket?
Yeah,
I had it
in my pocket.
All right.
Yeah. And cool. Made it into the hotel.
Yeah.
And just panicking, freaking out.
Totally.
Looking at the panels and the ceiling, like maybe I can slide what room am I in? Write it down. You know, I'll come back here in 10 years.
That is amazing.
And
that's awesome.
I was thinking of doing that.
Yeah.
And the thought of...
Was there ever a thought where you're like, I'm going to give it back. I fucking cheated because I smoked pot.
I never thought I cheated.
Ago. Right, exactly.
It never crossed my mind that I cheated. I felt like... right from the beginning, like, how can this happen?
Right.
I just did 3 drug tests.
Disbelief.
Now I'm testing positive?
Yeah.
The fourth one? Like, yeah. So that was instantly what I was thinking.
Yeah.
And, you know, after I lost my medal and got it back again, there was backlash against the Canadian Olympic team, the whole entire team, for causing a scandal and a controversy and this whole thing. And, you know, I went back on air and there was rumblings of that I should apologize.
Oh,
on
yeah.
TV.
Apologies were big back then for stuff like this. It's a perfect example of like you could kind of redeem yourself by apologizing or something.
Somehow.
Yeah.
Like, who knows what they were thinking? Like,
sure.
This is unprecedented.
Totally.
And I said, no, I'm not apologizing.
Yeah.
And I'm not, you know, I'm still going to hang out with my friends and da 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 da.
Right. All this, right.
You know, that was.
Because is that the official prognosis? Like if you talk to a doctor, said, look, I hung out with my buddies, they were smoking weed, secondhand smoke is enough to test positive because their tests are really.
We had no idea, yeah. Except for that was what happened.
Yeah. Yeah. There's that's like the official.
There's no other way I know because yeah. That's what happened. And
yeah.
And so, but what did occur was doctors here at the time found, you know, because they said it was whatever point, whatever nanograms, right?
Sure.
So like, oh, okay, let's see, what is that? And they're like, oh, no, that's definitely could only be secondhand smoke. And I'm like, yeah, well, because when I got home, people were like, oh, the doctors did the thing and they said it really was secondhand smoke. I'm like, I know it was.
Yeah, yeah.
I know.
I wasn't lying this whole time. No. I know it was up. No. I'm a professional.
I get it called racer. Out, though, often about,
sure.
about it. Did you really? Look, you can tell me. I'm like, you know, no, seriously.
Yeah, I don't even think, I mean, sure, it would cross my mind to ask, but no, you seem like a genuine dude. We're talking about.
I would have loved, if I really did smoke weed, I would have been like, I did.
Right, of course you would. Yeah, totally.
You know, like I didn't mean to, but I couldn't help it.
Sure.
I had
a weed
whatever,
problem, man.
you know, whatever. I don't even know what.
But yeah, what an insult.
Weed isn't like that.
Yeah, to have, no, exactly. So what an insult to have given up something that helps you sleep, helps you enjoy your food, helps you socialize with people. Recover. Yeah.
Sustainable.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. It's like, you know, now we know so much more about
pot. Go to bed early, wake up early.
Totally.
I mean.
But you've given this up, and now on national TV in front of everybody, they're spanking you for having smoked it 4 months ago or whatever. It's like, give me a fucking break.
Yeah.
Give me a break.
Yeah, no, they put me in. I was quickly in the police station.
In the police station?
Yeah. I was quickly in the police station.
In Nagano.
In Nagano, getting charged with importing a banned substance. Or
in your blood?
Substance. Yeah. And it wasn't even, I found out recently that, amazingly.
Yeah.
Because I don't know, when's this podcast coming out?
Not 6 weeks or something.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Because I just did an interview recently for CBC.
Oh, sick.
And it's coming out in a couple of days.
Right.
And so, but I recently found out from doing this interview, because it was an investigative interview about Nagano and shit.
So
kind of with some people like Chalmers and other people that Mark Fawcett, it was in the interview. Ian Adamansing is in it. And anyways, the drug testers, like the doctors who did our drug test.
Yeah.
Went around the IOC and delivered the results to the police independently of the Olympics.
What?
Yeah.
That sucks.
I just found that out like 2 days ago.
No.
Maybe someone told me that back in the day and I don't remember.
Sure,
but
sure.
This is news to me.
So do you get charged in Japan?
I did.
For like a misdemeanor kind of charge?
It never got to that point because by then, before I had ended up in jail, 2 days had gone by or 1.5 days had gone by where I had done 2 appeals to the IOC committee.
Yeah.
All like in person in front of them and
pleaded your case. Said, look,
told them what happened.
Yeah. I've smoked weed.
I smoke weed. I told them I smoke
but I
weed.
Quit.
I quit because I love the Olympics. And I wanted to meet the criteria for that. It was the most important thing in my life.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. And, but Yeah. And then Dick Pound voted against me.
Yeah.
And he didn't vote for
That's
me.
That's a guy's name?
And it was, yeah, he's like the head of the drug for Canada. He's like the Canadian.
That's the worst name I've ever heard in my whole life.
It's the best name.
It's the best name.
For this guy.
Yeah.
I know Dick too a little bit.
Yeah.
And because I don't know if you know who he is.
No, I have no idea.
So he currently holds the head of the IOC drug enforcement division of the IOC.
That's insane.
But at the time, that wasn't his position, but he was trying to get it. And so politically, he probably, I'm just speculating that he abstained from voting in my favor.
Got
and
it.
I had lost by one vote. And they normally would give it to the athlete by one vote. Athletes never lost by one vote before. They give them the benefit of the doubt.
Right.
And this was the first time, unprecedented. I lost. They one vote. So Dick's vote really would have counted and would have avoided it, like, this.
The whole scandal.
Well, it Not would have been over scandal, but sooner.
Yeah.
Let's just put it that way. And I don't mean to throw Dick under the bus, but
no,
it's a fact.
No, of course. That's what happened. Yeah.
And then, so I lost that one. And then the next day I was in a high profile wine and cheese in a tower in Nagano with like Prince Albert of Monaco. And he was the bobsledder at the time.
Had you been to jail at that point?
No, I was on my way.
You're on your way.
And they're
oh my God.
I'm meeting with the lawyers of arbitration because I'm past the appeals and now I'm going to arbitration.
And holy shit, dude.
I'm at this wine and cheese and Prince Albert's talking to me and he's got some inside news from the lawyers. He's like, it's sounding good, bro.
Nice.
Hit me up next time you're in Monaco. But I haven't done that yet.
You got to go to Monaco. But,
totally. It's nice there. And I've been there and it's like what it looks like.
Unfriggin' believable.
Yeah.
Okay, so
the lawyers I met with at the wine and cheese, and they're like, this is, weed's not on the list of banned substances.
Right. And so they've got egg on their face.
There's like
big
nothing
time.
They can do. Like you're gonna get your medal back.
Yeah, it's not a performance enhancing drug, and it's not illegal across the world, right?
No.
And so
at the time, it was on some sports list of banned substances.
Got it.
But not in others, and ours is one of those ones. That wasn't on it.
It just wasn't on.
We thought it was.
Sure.
Because it was on the World Cup tour.
Right.
And we assumed that the World Cup tour, because it's the same federation, would be.
So after all of this bullshit, you wind up with a criminal charge in Japan.
Uh-huh.
Do they throw it out of court? Because
I didn't even go get they never even followed through with
the charges and
the
all
charges.
That stuff.
I did an interrogation at the police station
for
most of the day, which got stressful through an interpreter. And
were they good cop, bad cop in you? Were they like, when did you smoke weed?
Yeah, they're like, what's all?
Where's your
this?
Weed?
How do you smoke it? And I roll a joint, and they're like, oh, what do you mean? And I'm like, they gave me a cigarette, and I opened it up and then rolled it back up again. And,
my God.
Their reply was, so you smoke tobacco with your weed? And I was like, no, guys. But
wow, man.
This was before the official decision. So I didn't know. I was maybe like from what I heard at that wine and cheese party, that was good news.
Yep.
But I was still in this jail getting processed.
Jesus.
What independently of the Olympics. Around the outside of the whole Olympic venue. And most athletes who end up at the Olympics and test positive for steroids don't have to deal with law enforcement.
Of course not.
And go to jail and shit.
Jesus, dude.
And so I'm like, oh man, like how much worse can it get, right?
Yep. So when does the tailspin stop?
During the visit to the police station is when the news of me officially being reinstated came.
Yeah.
And
they offer an apology or anything like that?
No, and they actually called me a liar after.
Right. They said that you smoked weed. They said like, he's
I didn't
got
say
it in
I didn't smoke
right,
weed,
right,
but
right.
I don't know what they thought I was lying about.
Right.
But I guess they thought I was smoking weed. But
at the
I don't
games
think they
whatever,
thought that
yeah.
I was smoking weed at the Olympics.
Right, right.
But I think they thought that I was smoking weed like the day before I got there. I don't know what they thought.
Gotcha.
I don't know what they thought.
And they never apologized, but you got your medal. you're recognized as the very first gold medalist snowboarder in the world.
Yeah.
And your life goes crazy from there. I remember seeing you on TV and being like, wow.
Yeah, I went straight from the police station, literally, to the Beverly Hilton. I flew on 747, right? Like jumbo jet.
Yeah.
In 1998, right? With the bubble.
Yeah,
the
dude.
On the top floor.
You were in VIP.
Yeah.
Who flew you?
The Leno's Tonight people? Show.
Yep.
Yeah.
How fucking awesome. So you go from winning gold, partying, having the best day of your life, worst 2 days of your life.
Yeah.
Back to, like, I guess it would be tainted though. Like,
it was.
While you're on your way over, you're like, wait, are they going to fucking make fun of me for smoking weed or?
No, I was like shell-shocked.
But you just
PTSD'd
came
PTSD'd out.
Yeah.
Like I had just gone through something.
Yeah.
No matter what, you could give me $1 million and it wouldn't change what happened.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
And there's nothing that could reverse that. And it took me like 10 years to kind of process it all.
Yeah.
But at the time, I'm at the Beverly Hilton.
Yep.
I have Porsche dropped a car off for me.
Come on.
No. And I'm ripping around Beverly Hills the next day in a Porsche and... You know, the Roots guys are, Michael and Don from Roots are there. And it was just like this whole crazy ride after that.
Back to the top of the world for a bit.
Yeah. For a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was quite the...
And then Whistler...
Things got a little out of hand. Like, you know, it was a lot of media, a lot of me not doing my thing, like snowboarding, and a lot of me being in Toronto and working with Roots and doing the whole media. What you would think you would do, probably. Like for me, it was different. I was packing the Eaton Center in Toronto. 7,000 people come to my autograph signing.
Come on.
Yeah, packing Whistler Village, same thing.
Yeah.
It was nuts.
So do they give you the run at Whistler kind of right as soon as you get home type of thing?
That was like, I think awarded to me on the homecoming welcoming.
Congrats, dude. You earned it.
Oh,
you
thanks.
Earned it, dude. Like all of that stuff. You won the race. That's the thing is you won the friggin' race.
Yeah.
And you were the fastest guy at the Olympics on that course that year.
Yeah.
And I can't believe they put you through that crap.
That was great.
Yeah.
It was crazy. I mean, it wasn't great. I didn't feel great about it.
No.
And for a long time, I didn't feel great about it. And I even had a hard time to talk about it.
Sure.
To be honest. But, you know, like you said, it's been 22 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's part of my story. And it's made up, you know, who I am basically as a person. And you can never, you know, not a lot of people have that opportunity.
Or have a story that big, right?
And then for it to be connected to weed, for it to be all about weed.
Right.
Which I loved.
Right.
At the time.
Right.
Like, so much. I loved weed so much. You can't even know how much I loved weed. And I even love it as much as,
sure.
Now as I did then.
Right.
And more. But it was just like, I knew there was like this thing about it that was going to catch on like snowboarding and, you know, it worked for me. And if it works for me, it's going to, you know, lots of people are going to feel the same way.
Totally.
And yeah. You know.
So at what point do you start dreaming up like Ross's Gold or like working with cannabis in the Canadian legal market? Was it before it was legal even? You're like, okay, we're going to help with legislation and try and push this
through. Well, I was an advocate right away for cannabis.
Cool.
And I got behind cannabis right away.
Sick.
On my first year in 1998.
Yeah.
And started doing our interviews for why cannabis is performance enhancing.
Sure.
And started talking about it before the science was really out there.
Mm-hmm.
I was making these claims that it gave me the motivation to go into the gym 700 times in a row. Fuck you if you can do that without weed.
Yeah, man.
You're an asshole. You can do that without weed.
Yeah, Jim Barnum, when we turned 30, he was like, dude, you got to try weed in the gym.
Right.
It's just like the best.
It's so
like
fun.
Meditation. It's like forced meditation.
Like you don't have to make yourself do it. It's
right.
Like, okay, I'm going to jump in the car, put some tunes on, and go to the gym.
It's enjoyable.
You know, you do it. And now I'm all about cycling. I don't lift weights anymore, but I'm all about the ultra endurance. But yeah, the opportunity and to have that given to me, like the platform, the weed platform
on
my lap.
Yeah, man.
right? Like that was sketchballs at the time.
Sure,
know?
Dude.
Fuck, what am I going to do?
Yeah,
shit. But when the questions came and, you know, I just on the fly decided, you know, I was going to get behind cannabis.
Cool.
And I was going to be the, you know, take the hit, whatever happens, happens.
Sure.
You know, at that point, I felt like I had gone through enough and lost kind of enough anonymity.
Yeah.
And also that I was out of the pot closet at the same time, that all the things I would have normally tried to protect.
Yeah.
Now we're not there anymore. So I may, you know, I can truly follow my passion, which was weed, and get into, you know, trying to get involved. And so officially we started Ross Gold like going on 8 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah. So 6 years before legalization.
Yep. Yeah.
Just around.
Cool.
Yeah. And so that was before Harper even came out with his regulations on medical cannabis.
Oh yeah.
Before it was the MMAR at the time.
Yeah.
And we didn't know the MMAR, what it was going to look like, but we knew something was coming and we wanted to be on the front edge of it. And so we launched Ross Gold, was going to be basically a coffee shop, like the Amsterdam Cafe, basically.
Yep. Very cool.
And so
yeah, and then you can show up and be the most famous Canadian pot advocate there is. MMAR, by the way, is Medical Marijuana Access Resource or something.
Yeah, regulation.
Regulation. Right. I think it's regulations, right.
Yeah.
And that was this kind of convoluted system to gain access to pot legally.
You could, like, grow it yourself or designate someone to grow it.
Designate a grower.
And you had to renew it.
Yeah, landmark.
Over and over.
Landmark law in Canada based around the medical marijuana access program.
Now there's the new one, the ACMPR.
Yeah.
And that's somehow different, but the same thing, kind of.
Right. What about this recreational pot thing? Like now it's just, you don't need it to be medicinal in order to enjoy it.
No. But it's medicinal anyways.
Yeah,
it's
totally.
It's still good for you, even if you're doing, you know, smoking shatter, it's still fucking good for you.
Sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's funny, right? But
yeah, totally.
I always say there's no such thing as recreational cannabis.
There's nothing other than medicinal pot.
No.
It's evolved alongside humans forever.
Yeah.
For a very long time.
Yeah.
It's an amazing
In one generation,
plant.
it was made, put under prohibition.
Yeah.
One generation.
It was so dumb.
For no reason.
It's a food. It's a fiber for ropes and cloth. It
fights COVID. It's like helps you not get it.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Just boosts your immune system.
It bumps off the little pokies off it.
Nice.
So it doesn't get them all, but it prevents, it's like a whatever. I can't remember what, you can look it up. It's real.
Yeah.
You can actually Google that shit. And I'm not even kidding.
It.
We couldn't say that in the 90s.
No, you couldn't. For sure you couldn't.
No, there's a couple of studies that.
Yeah, I mean, in the 90s, you're still trying to figure out whether it's going to grow hair on your hands.
They're just like, fuck you.
Yeah, yeah.
That was
the
end of it.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah.
Now it's like, no, Google it.
Very little medical research done on marijuana, which is, it's disappointing because of how.
Well, Schedule 1.
Yeah.
They're not allowed to do like positive results drug tests or research.
Schedule 1 means that there's no good use for this in humans.
Recently been taken off Schedule 1.
Thank God.
In the last week.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So it was still a Schedule 1, even though it was legal recreationally?
It wasn't.
What a backwards,
only state
weird thing.
Why? Not federally.
Oh, you're talking in the states.
Yeah.
Oh, great.
So Canada didn't have the Schedule 1 problem, but we were dealing with America as our trading partner.
Yeah,
so
yeah, because
we were following suit.
I was told on the show by a weed guy from Tantalus Labs up in out in Coquitlam.
Yeah.
He said, if you're ever trying to go into the States and they ask you a weed-related question, just tell them you rescind your request to enter the United States and they just let you go back.
Yeah, you can come back.
Yeah, you just go back.
Yeah.
I rescind my, I don't want to come in here anymore.
I just recently, like, I'm not allowed in the States.
Because of the scandal?
Because of this whole thing.
Oh, my God.
In 9/11, I got put on the no-fly list. And
wow.
So then I was officially banned from the States, and I now have
you
paperwork.
You were that famous that you get on the 9/11 commission no-fly list.
But I can't get the Instagram check.
Right.
But I'm on the no-fly list. So it doesn't make any sense at all to me. God. I don't get it.
So you're blacklisted like through these United States weirdos.
Yeah, I have paperwork called advanced parole.
Gotcha.
That gets me in now.
Yeah.
And so that's no fun.
What? Yeah, what a bummer.
Them, you have to give it to them.
Yes.
And you're supposed to say, like, tell them, like, volunteer.
Up front.
What, and yeah. I recently had to.
Yeah.
I hadn't been through in 12 years.
Wow.
And he didn't ask me anything. He's like, so what's your job in Canada? And I'm like, I'm an ex-pro athlete. And he's like, oh, I guess that's why you have that tattoo on your hand. And so I guess that's, you know, I'll use that again next time.
Sure. Ex-pro athlete.
What, you know,
yeah,
that's what I do. I'm an ex-pro athlete.
Sure.
That's a job.
Yeah,
okay. Dude. Oh, fuck. What do you do for money? I'm an ex-pro athlete.
I'm an ex-pro athlete. Figure it out. Oh, that's awesome, dude. Yeah, you just mentioned your tattoo. You got a tattoo on your left hand of the Olympic.
Yeah,
is it Italy, the Olympic ring?
This is it's the Olympic
rings
with the star, and it says I have to put Italiano Comitato something of it's like a medal that Italy awarded to me after the Olympics.
Wow.
And so I got it tattooed onto my hand.
Dude, that's so sick.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's an Olympic group, obviously. Have you ever met any other Olympic gold medalists? I mean, obviously JCJ and the Canadians, Mile, and
I know all those guys, and for sure, and for years known them, but you know, like I was there with the dream team, the hockey team, Eric Lindros, and I hung out.
Wow, man!
And the day before, I flew to Beverly Hills, and I was hanging out with all the like Theo Fleury and, you know, a bunch of those guys, and they're all
sick
gold medalists now.
Oh, yeah,
stuff.
Of course.
But, you know, I guess at the time, like, you know, the curlers, or some of the curlers had, you know, were there, and they won gold medals.
Yeah, man.
And we were hanging. They put us with them, actually. The curlers and the snowboarders were kind of put in the same group.
That's interesting.
It was like heavy partying on both both teams.
Curlers can handle some partying.
Curling is partying.
Yeah.
It's another.
It's a bond spiel, man.
Yeah, it's. That's one thing about curling, you know. That's why it's a great sport. It's a party sport.
I love it so much.
It would be
dude.
Fun. I've only done it one time.
So were you training when you went to the Olympics, like on a regimen, like in the gym, training really hard? Because that was pretty rare at that point.
Yeah.
You know, Craig had done it for his World Cup stuff through the late 80s into the early 90s, but it was rare, right?
Yeah, I was one of the only guys that really took that end of it.
Yeah.
Seriously, but if you know how big Mike Jacoby is.
He's huge, yeah.
And you realize there's no weight class and you know,
true.
And the bigger you are, the faster you go.
Sure.
And that's just pure physics. So, you know, I was aware of that. And, you know, coming into World Cup, I was probably like 160 pounds. And at the Olympics, I was probably closer to 190.
Wow.
And I went through 1 year of just realizing that I needed to get heavier to win races, and just being on tour and eating cheesecake and ice cream, and got up to like 196 pounds at U.S. Open, and won the U.S. Open, and
best year of your life,
best year ever. I won tons of races and European championships that year too.
Rad.
And then that summer I got on this serious workout program and showed up at the first race of the season in Europe. Just ripped.
Yeah.
At the same weight.
Wow.
And, you know, Burton thought I was on steroids. There was complaints made. And they're like, what do you have to say about that? And I'm like, well, there's nothing else I can say except it's a compliment. I appreciate the attention. I didn't even realize myself personally, like in a speed suit. Like I wasn't like working out, looking at myself in the fucking mirror or anything like that. I was just like, doing my thing, like doing, you know.
Taking it seriously.
Yeah, you're taking it seriously. Like we didn't, you know, like we would do like mushrooms and go on mountain bike rides, right?
Rad.
And stuff like that.
Yeah,
and
man.
Endurance, like long, long ass rides.
Sure.
And I'm not even kidding. Like it was hard to do with the mushrooms.
Of course, man.
And because of how long it was, like the Muslims give you the energy, but I mean, we were taking it seriously. Like what we were doing was serious, but you know, we were having fun.
Yeah.
And back in the day, like we weren't, there was no drug testing. Like,
no,
we didn't
course.
Think of that.
Right.
We were just like, let's, you know, and even on the World Cup tour, when I'm, what I'm talking about, there was no drug testing.
Totally.
We didn't think of anything like that. We weren't doing shrooms on tour. None of that crossed our mind. Like we were serious.
Yeah.
I was so serious. I barely drank.
Right.
I smoked weed. That's what I did.
Yeah.
And I was forced to drink, basically, by people.
People would
make me drink.
Oh, God.
Right?
That's the craziest thing about weed.
I quit drinking like 2 years ago.
Yeah,
like
me 100%. Too, sort of. I'm at 99%.
Yeah.
95%.
Yeah. And I just feel like so much better. I'm like lighter.
Yeah.
And it's not another thing I need at the end of the day. I've got my weed and my coffee.
That monkey on your back thing about, I find that with alcohol more than anything. Like where I'm making,
right.
I'm making like days in advance, you know, deals with myself. Like, okay, if I do the laundry and I do the thing, then I can have a six pack tonight. And then, I won't tomorrow. I guarantee it. And then the next day, it's just like,
don't
tell me. Yeah. Now I got to have 12, right? Like, it's like, that's a really difficult one to have a good relationship with.
Right.
Because it's also very bad for your health.
That's what it came down to.
Yeah.
You know? And not only that, but combine that with like the struggle I had after the Olympics and trying to break into the whole cannabis scene, which is all big dollars. Like it's all backed by big bucks. Right?
Of course it is.
And the people that came into it with big bucks.
Yeah.
And I don't come into it with anything.
Right.
I've got my bike I could sell. Right?
Yeah,
that's
man.
A $5,000 road bike. I could get business cards, man, and some more hats and shit. Right? But it's not like these guys that come into it with $50 million and then start up these giant corporations.
A 200,000 square
foot.
Have like
these billion-dollar market caps for no reason. Yeah, and everybody hates them, but they still have a billion-dollar market cap.
So weird, dude. It's so weird what happened in weed up here.
It's changing, and what I'm trying to do is starting to be allowed now. And
good,
you know, there's that whole aspect of the brands that hasn't really surfaced yet.
Right,
there aren't recognizable brands that people really care about, and
not
we've
yet.
Been trying over the last 7 to 8 years of getting that brand traction out. You know, we have a line of glass that was out for a number of years, Roscoe Glass, and we've been out at the trade shows for years and years now.
How's the reception been?
This is from one of the trade shows.
Oh, yeah. It's a trade show
booth.
We're
sitting in front of one of my banners. It's my YouTube, Instagram.
Oh, do you do...
I'm on Instagram.
And then do you do like live stories or do you do a podcast or something like that?
All that shit there behind you, is people send me shit. And
right.
I unbox it and
smoke
it or put it on or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And it's just something that people, you know, and so I have that going on. And
so it's an endorsement of like pot products or like anything that's...
Occasionally I do like some unboxings and it's pot. The reason I got this cool tumbler like from a tea company, Brewetta Tea gave me this cool thing with the old graphics of one of my helmets.
Oh, sick.
On it.
Dope,
that was
dude.
Cool. And... But mostly I just post pictures about my weed that I grow. And, you know, I know this is a snowboard podcast, but there's, you know, a certain segment of the whole weed culture that I'm pretty entrenched into right now with growing weed and how to grow weed. And
Rad.
So we're actually coming out. Roscoe Nutrients is coming out.
Cool. For helping people grow.
Yeah, we're going to – we have
dude,
plant,
that's sick.
Plant food coming out.
And great idea.
We've got all kinds of other stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that.
It's a, there was a divergence for me with the culture around 15 years ago, because you remember what Vancouver 420 was like back in the day.
Yeah.
It was just this big, amazing, like, hey, we can smoke weed here. And then the cops decriminalized. It was awesome.
Yeah.
But as those got bigger and bigger, there was a point where weed smoking left where I was comfortable.
Left the building.
You left the building and wasn't a part of, like, I've smoked a joint in the Mount Baker Forest.
Yeah.
You know, and they said, oh, we used to have a bong taped to one of these trees here and you'd melt the snow. And It's like, it's been there with snowboarding the whole way through.
I've got stories about well-known people.
Yeah, of course. Right, right. Yeah. And the thing
And even today, like, prohibition's over, but I don't want to tell you that.
You're right. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
That's our generation.
Yeah.
Our kids will grow up. Like, my kid smoked some weed when he was 14, kind of behind my back. And he was so scared that I was going to be mad. I was like, dude, I'm so glad you're not drinking booze.
Right. That's where I'm at.
And I'm not like, okay, drop out of school and be a stoner. How did you like it? He's like, I loved it. It feels really good.
Yeah.
And then he made the decision on his own. He said, you know what? I'm not going to smoke it for senior year. It's just like, I see the people that are getting too into it and they're not able to focus on their school.
Well, I always say weed introduces you to yourself, right?
Yeah, man.
And, you know, I started smoking a little bit at the end of high school.
Sure.
And more around like 18, 19, I started getting into it more. And when I moved to Whistler, I realized this was like a whole nother thing I didn't even know existed.
Yeah, man.
But you start to become, you know, more aware of yourself and you get introspective on it. And
totally.
That's new for a young person.
Absolutely.
You're just like, running into the traffic and not even think about whatever the fuck's going on or what you're doing. But as soon as you have that first puff and all of a sudden you're like, whoa, I'm a person. You know, like,
yeah, dude,
I have control over like my life, and you don't have those thoughts before, right?
Yeah, totally, man. Yeah, like, I still feel weird talking about it for sure.
It's my job, right?
So yeah, yeah.
For me, I've got kids running around, I'm smoking joints, and you can see that, you know, I don't like freak out if they come down here.
No,
man. I'm smoking a joint,
right?
You can probably smell weed down here, whatever.
Yeah.
It's not like you turn away when you're holding your beer to have a sip from your kids, right?
Exactly.
And that they know they're not supposed to come down here. They're just fucking with us because they're interested in all this gear.
They're excited.
Gear here and stuff like man. That. But normally they're good.
This has been one of the most fun interviews I've ever done, Ross. Thank you for being on the show and thanks for really bringing it. I'm really glad that the weed hasn't done anything to your memory. You even pulled that Omar.
Omar, it came.
Yeah.
It came to me.
But I mean, I've had guests on the show that don't smoke weed that are like, dude, that was 20 years ago. I don't know what was there.
Right. And that was even longer ago. This was like...
Dude, when we're talking
Omar was like 25, 26 years
ago. And we're talking about Gimo Till shooting that day.
Right.
That's 30 1990. Years ago. That's 30 years ago now.
Is it?
Yeah. 1990.
Oh my God.
Isn't that nuts, man? It's half a life. More than half our life ago.
Right?
Yeah.
I've got 3 kids... 2 cats, 2 guinea pigs, a budgie, and a corso. And time went by since the Olympics, but it went by quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it went by quickly. It was one of the craziest, you know, rides that you couldn't even, you know, make up.
You couldn't make that up?
No.
Mike Tyson biting an ear, it was that big of a story.
Yeah, some people have had some... You know, like, I can relate to a lot of, like, I listen to Drake, okay? Like, if you listen to his lyrics, any one of those songs could be about me. And I think that people relate to him that way anyways.
Yes,
and
sure.
He sings like that. That's the way his style is. He's very relatable. But, man, there's not a lot of people that have walked down, you know, the path that I have.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Like I said, and I'm not, or... You were the most famous snowboarder in the world for a good amount of time, too, because it was just such a big controversy.
I would think you could, and it's mind-boggling.
It's mind-boggling.
You know, even most famous person, period, like just for a couple of days.
That.
I remember when I flew to L.A.
Yeah.
I was in the Narita Airport in Tokyo.
Yeah.
And some business guy... Just
Rando.
Walking by with a briefcase, he stops and is like, you're that snowboarder. And I freaked out. I'm like, no.
Not me.
It's not me. And he's like, why are you saying it's not you? And I'm like, oh, that's when I realized. Like instantly, so before that I was surrounded by Olympic people. Obviously, they would all know who I was.
Totally.
But I walk in through the Narita Airport with a chaperone from the Olympic team to get me on the jumbo jet. And just the first person I see, and I'm like, okay, this is more than I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome,
anyways,
dude.
I appreciate your
So yeah, did you, yeah, did you ever have to do like PTSD therapy stuff for this?
I didn't know any of that existed.
Yeah, yeah.
But I did, I never did get diagnosed that I had it.
Right.
But I probably could go and say this is
yeah,
how
I'm not
I felt
a doctor,
for 10 years.
Come on, seriously.
I didn't get my mail for 10 years. I didn't couldn't pay my taxes. I got audited.
Yeah. Wow.
I went through all this shit.
Wow,
I lost
man.
All my sponsors. Like yeah. there was a lot of fallout from it.
Sure.
And it
of
took
course.
Me time to get from there to, you know, to get here.
Yeah.
And you know, I've been doing a lot of work even in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
Let alone 20 years.
Yeah.
And things have changed from me getting over the Olympics to, okay, now I'm this is the rest of my life for the last 10 years is kind of what I've been focusing on.
Yeah, man.
And so, you know, you see, I've got a family.
Totally.
And I got a whole thing going on with, you know, the cannabis scene.
Yeah.
And it's balls out every day.
It seems like
it's crazy.
You're making it happen, man.
Yeah.
It seems like you're making it happen.
Yeah, we're going to see.
I'm on your side on this one. I think this is going to be a huge thing.
Yeah, man. We don't know. We hope we got, you know, the passion to do it, and you know,
yeah.
we've been at it for 8 years,
yeah,
already.
And you got the name, man. You got the name.
Well, we're just gonna, you know, take it to the hill,
yeah,
yeah, throw down.
Sick, Ross. Thanks, buddy.
Yeah, right on.
F and Rad shout outs to Ross and his kids and his partner for having me into their home. Thanks, you guys. Special thanks to listener Al King for waiting so patiently for the signed Dano print of Russell Winfield. I want to shout out Tyler Lepore, who called me this week out of the blue. Some more dad talk. We're going to go shred Seymour, but Tyler's, you know, at the very beginning stage of taking his kids up the mountain. You can hear the frustration. I might do a side hits episode with that. So check that out if I do that. And be sure to come back next week for another episode of the F and Rad Snowboard Podcast, presented by Vans and brought to you by SIA Productions.